And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast. It actually will get into your ear and displace the wax that has built up there, which you've left there because you've been too busy working on your race bike.
Is it true that earwigs crawl into your ears and make you wig out?
But that's about the quality of humor you're going to hear for the next 20 minutes.
For number 58.
Yes. He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering.
Michael Gugis.
You can find Ed on the web.
At Lindemann Engineering.
le-suspension.com. And you can find my insane rantings on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. Ed, what day is it?
Sunday.
December?
Something after Christmas.
27th.
Yes.
Where are we right now?
Outside my shop, basking in the little few rays of the sun that remain to stay warm.
Oh, man.
Gugis is so smart, he forgot a jacket.
No,
but he looks good in mine.
And the
rattly noise is the pretzel container.
Hold on. We got to go back.
Rich Oliver Mitchery School thank you gift
thank
package.
Thank you, Rich Oliver.
And we're eating summer sausage to go with it.
Let's go back to how good I look.
No. That's a really short subject.
You know what, Ed? Don't bring your personal physical problems into this.
You know that line that you had about having the tenacity of a tumbleweed? That was pretty good.
Tenacity
Michael
of a tumbleweed.
Michael wants to have the tenacity
I
of a
do.
Tumbleweed. Yeah.
You know, you can...
They don't give
hey,
up.
You can learn from... You can
the
learn.
Thing is, they just go with the direction of the wind. They don't have a mind of their own.
Still, but boy, once they've decided which direction to go, you know? Hey,
this summer sausage is good. Do you know what summer wine is made out of?
No.
Strawberries, cherries, and angels kiss in spring.
Angels kiss in the spring. Where did you hear that from?
It's a song.
Oh my God.
Summer wine.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard this song.
But listen to the wrong kind of music.
You know what? When I lived in the Midwest, you could go visit wineries back there, and they would make sunflower wine and dandelion wine, and it was just.
If you're alcoholic, everything's wine.
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Oh man, it's
what
great.
Were you gonna say?
I was going to say that we can learn from dumb things. We can definitely learn from dumb things. Mitch Hedberg talks about, have you ever played tennis with the wall? It's awful. The wall is relentless.
Always wins.
Speaking of which.
That's a stick and ball game, so I don't have a lot of experience with it.
All I know about it is what a dead comedian told me. But we're here to talk about racing, Ed. And what's going on in the world of racing? Hey, weren't you at the track a couple of days ago?
Yeah, Chuck Walla with two-wheel track days.
Cool. How'd it go?
I had a good time. I made my customers happy, and I got to ride my Ninja in
Excellent.
The sunshine. And I'm smart, right? It's really cold in the morning. I'm taking care of customers. In the afternoon, when they're all happy and they're, you know, nothing more to do, then I ride in the track's as warm as it's going to get. And then guess what?
What?
I stop before the sun gets to where it's blasting in your eyes. You know, right above the horizon.
Right above
those
mountains out there.
I've done that. I know it's no fun. Screw it. Stop now.
No, it's, you know, those the hour-long
I had to go old school on them.
What?
My generator in the motorhome screwed up.
Okay.
So I had to park the bike in the sun to warm the tires. And then still pass people on the outlap, right?
We did those hour-long tag team races out there at the very end of Saturday. It was just, I mean, it was like just every lap right into the sun, you know. It was, ugh. That was unpleasant.
Probably the scariest thing I ever did was riding a 6-bike train, getting photos in the magic sunlight at Willow. And we're going into turn. So at Willow, the sun is setting, and you're riding into turn two, and you're looking straight in the sun.
Right.
And right at the turn-in point, we're all completely blind.
Right.
But it was a fucking awesome shot because of the magic light you get when the sun's really low and everything seems to glow and whatnot. But we all got back in the pits, and we were all scared to death. Well, the only way you can do it, right, is you got to know the other guy's going to do his thing, and you just do your thing, and it all...
Right. They're going to hold their line.
You only
got to
pucker
the
for
throttle,
one second.
Right,
exactly.
You know? It's funny how dangerous a lot of this stupid stuff is. Just reading about that thing that we have here about Olivier Jacques.
No, before we get to Jacques...
Well, hold on, let me finish.
Okay.
Alex Hoffman, he got the reason he wound up on the Kawasaki MotoGP bike was because Alex Hoffman got injured on a scooter. He got injured during a publicity stunt where it was on a scooter, it hit some cobblestone, the cobblestone was wet, and he got hurt.
Yeah.
Ended his career, I think. Anyway, go on. We have mail.
We have mail, so we test ran a VOG. A video blog last time.
Turns out we have a face made for radio.
Yeah, that's totally true. It didn't come out very good. You know, we have obviously, Michael had and I had to learn, like, you can't blow your nose a bunch of times when you're making a vlog, or nobody cares when you're making a blog, right? And then also the technology we had, it didn't work, right? It was all, you know, jumpy, and the sound didn't seem to match. So we're working on that.
I do not understand why people do FaceTime. The whole joy of a telephone is that the mother on the other end can't see you, right? Exactly. Do you know how many senators I've interviewed in my underwear?
I have been of the opinion the whole time that we don't need a vlog, that we're doing fine with a blog.
We don't need video phones. We don't need a video phone.
So anyway, we got to compliment Risk Crespo once again. Folks will remember him from MotoElite.com.
Right.
He's the guy that's, you know, really good at getting us to plug him.
We are.
So he's like, oh, yeah, you guys are going to do a vlog. That's awesome. Here, pick some t-shirts.
We love it.
Risk, sorry, you have jumped the gun. We're not ready for that yet. Keep in mind.
We might still take the t-shirts.
Yeah.
Because the word whore is overused. It's just thrown around. But I'll be honest with you. Free t-shirts. I'm down with that, as the saying goes.
So Michael sent me a quote of an interview. How do you say this guy's name?
Denny Hulme.
Olivier Jacques. Olivier Jacques.
Right.
Because he got a ride filling in for somebody in 2005 MotoGP race in China.
Right.
And it rained. So he's on the Kawasaki. His first ride.
First time he's ever ridden this bike.
Yep. And so he qualifies third row or something like that.
Just a second. Rich Oliver, if you're listening, these pretzels rock.
They are good pretzels, yes.
All right, go on.
But those cheese things were horrible.
Really?
Yeah, you opened the package and then walked away from it. Did you not eat one?
I did.
I ate one. I'm like, this is why he just opened it and walked away.
No.
Okay, good. You can finish them.
Excellent.
Anyway, but Rich didn't make them. He just had good choice in picking the package deal.
Right.
The basket. Anyway, at the end of the first lap, he was 11th, and he goes on to finish the race in second, catching Rossi to the very end.
Right.
It was a spectacular race
to
watch.
You know what I loved about that?
It was pouring down rain.
No, yeah, the thing where he said that he was not perceived to be a threat to the extent. Go ahead and tell him.
So, you know, when they show the pit board to whomever, right? They tell their rider how far whomever is behind them,
right?
Which means those guys got to have that person's name ready, you know, to put it on the board. Well, they didn't have
Jacques.
It says Jacques. It sure doesn't look like it.
Yeah.
They didn't have Oliver's name ready. So They had to, like, jury rig something.
It's like plus three, guy.
They mentioned that in the commentary while I was watching the race. The thing that I noticed, because when Michael sent me this, then I went, I have my MotoGP pass, and so I went and watched that race this morning.
Oh, cool.
Man, the coverage quality has come a long way
since
2005. The biggest thing, there's two biggest things. One was now they have every inch of the track covered, so they don't miss anything.
Right.
And then the other was the guys doing the talking now. One of them is the same person from 2005.
Really?
Nick. But in 2005, they had one of those guys that does the screaming thing when he starts talking at the start of the race. And you're an announcer. How can you not know that screaming is bad? Right? So anyway, that guy's gone.
It's their job. It's their job to make it, quote unquote, more exciting.
Some of those races back then, with the poor coverage where they only have part of the lap that they can show you, weren't nearly as exciting as they are now. Now, the story tells itself.
It's motorcycle road racing. How much do you have to sell it, you know?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Well, that guy thought he had to sell it.
You know, I'll tell you, and there's a difference between...
You're going to have to tell me, because this is a blog. Podcast.
A podcast. It's not a V-blog or whatever it is, right? I'll tell you, the best part about exciting announcing, I can see it. We're good. Wait, are we doing the Doppler shift thing again?
Yeah, we are. Minutes and 18 seconds.
Yes. Is when the announcers are completely unrehearsed in their excitement. Like when somebody gets a really spectacular
save.
Well, they're
calling it live. They have to be.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes they're manufacturing it. Oh, the blue bike is catching the red bike, that sort of thing. Right? But then somebody, like, nearly high-sides themselves to the moon and somehow manages to save it, and both of the announcers are like, whoa, did you see that? You know? They genuinely are excited. That's what makes for good announcing.
Well, that's part of it, right? Yeah, you have to balance
And be knowledgeable.
A background knowledge, which right. is really critical. Mm. When they can tell you things like, oh, this is similar to what happened back in the day, that really puts the thing together, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's all the stuff you don't see off camera that, mm-hmm. that they can use that information that, you know, they talk to so-and-so on the plane on the way out here, and they can build a fuller picture for you. But then also, yeah, you don't want to, you want to do it live.
Right.
Right? It is exciting, and you want to, if those guys have already seen it, and they're all, oh, wait for this, that ruins it, right?
Work. And it also, but it also doesn't work if they're trying to manufacture it. Yeah. If it sounds like, you know, and now how much would you pay for this? But wait, there's more. We'll give you two sets of Ginzu knives, you know? It's like, come on, really.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
We got a bunch of stuff here. Oh, the McLaren thing.
Oh, that was awesome, huh? That was a great quote. That was from Denny Hulme.
Oh, right.
That
yeah,
was from Denny Hulme.
They're talking.
Former Formula One and Can-Am driving champion. Completely antisocial, very friendly to a small group of friends. He had a great quote in that article, the interview. He said, if Princess Carolyn wants to put on a bikini and come down to sunbathe with me, that'd be okay, but I'm not going up to her freaking castle. I like that guy, okay? I like him a lot.
So, go on. What it says is, one of the things about working for the McLaren team was that everybody stays in the same class of hotel. So apparently some of these teams got the driver and maybe the team owner in some right. really ritzy place, and everybody else is in the place with the hookers on the corner.
Right.
Right? And so he's saying that on this team, they had everybody in the same hotel. That's classy. That's smart.
That's,
right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason that McLaren has been so successful. It hasn't been very good this year, but there's a reason they've been so successful for so long. It really is a team.
Right.
You know, yeah. I'll never forget Lewis Hamilton talking about, I remember every time I get into that car, I represent 700 guys back at the factory. You know, I mean,
yep.
you develop that sense of team on the road, and that way your mechanics, I think I told you about this time I was up at MotoGP at Laguna Seca, or one of the GP races up there. I'm eating breakfast at Denny's, and I look across over to the next booth, and there's some dudes from some Italian team who are eating at Denny's, and you know their rider wasn't eating at Denny's.
Yeah.
You know, right? And I said, I pointed to my friend, I said, I can't believe this. They came halfway around the world to eat at a Denny's. And he says, I know, when they really wanted to eat at a McDonald's.
You know, there's a lot of levels of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm constantly reminded, I was at Fontana. Elena had just crashed in practice.
Elena Myers.
I'm waiting for the bike to come back. I know the truck is going to bring it to my garage.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm waiting in front of my garage. Here comes the truck with the trailer, pulls up and stops. The guys jump out, you know, we're starting the process of unloading the bike. It's just me and the crew that needs to get back out quick as possible.
Right.
And so it's always nice to have an extra pair of hands when you're unloading a bike, and especially if it's just been crashed. And so Danny Eslick, you know, one of the riders on the team that year, comes running out of the truck and helps me unload the bike and get it over and grabs a stand for me and all that. Nobody else helped. Only the rider, who's not even my rider, you know.
Wow.
That's a team. He's the kind of guy. Well, another example of him is that big crash at Daytona. He crashes so bad he causes a red flag. He runs to get the bike. He has to run like a mile to catch the bike, right?
Right.
Jumps on a bike, rides it back to the pits, and then he jumps over the wall and disappears off camera. You're wondering, where'd he go? And the team's busily fixing the bike. He had to go get another set of leathers.
Right.
So he could get back on the bike, because awesome. He crashed, destroyed his leathers, and he's still, right?
And he's thinking, he knows what
his job is. When you have a team situation like that, where the rider is involved and cares, and the crew, everybody's treated equally, all of these little details come together, and everybody works that little bit harder, stays that little bit longer.
Exactly.
And it can mean the difference between winning and second. It can make the difference in a championship. And that's why people really like doing this stuff. When you see, you know, these guys, they show up and they go to an AMA National, and you wonder how they pulled it off, right? It's six friends, right? One of them's got a van, one of them's got a bike, one of them's the best rider, one of them's the biggest mechanic in the group, right? And they all pool their resources, and they get this amazing result that's a head and shoulders better than if you looked at their equipment. And that's worth 10 points, and that's worth 20 points, and it all adds up to 50 points less than where you should have refinished.
Right.
How'd you pull it off? It's that team thing.
You know, and that also explains why, I mean, for the longest time, man, I was of the Kevin Schwant school, which is the idea of, why do you go through all the bullshit of getting to the track and doing everything, and then on Sunday afternoon you don't get to ride the bike? But that's part of it. Mm-hmm. If you are treated as a valued member of the team, you will put in the effort, and that rider's success is your success as well. You share in it. That's part. You made that happen.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's the If you talk to fighter pilots, you talk to a guy who flies an F-15 C model, the single seat fighter, okay? He's an egomaniac, crazy racer, Matt Mladen kind of guy. That's my pretzel.
No, it's only partly your pretzel.
Okay. Part of it's going to be yours. Part here, of we it. Got, we've got more.
I'm going to turn this, Ed, I'm going to turn this into poo. Go ahead.
And then if you go talk to a two-seater crew, and I specifically did this. I talked to a guy who flew F-15 Cs.
Okay.
And I said to him, I said, wow, you know, in the F-15E, you got basically the same airplane, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got an extra pair of eyes. Wouldn't that be useful in everything? He goes, like, yeah, but that guy better keep his mouth shut when we're in the fight. And I thought, okay, but it's right. You have to have that personality to be a single seat guy.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got a chance to talk to the back seater of an F-18,
okay.
FA-18, okay, two seat plane. And she said, 1 + 1 = 3. Right, her personality, right, and it makes perfect sense. If you're going to do that job, you got to be that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have a team and it's all working good, the cook is every bit a part of the championship that you earn because of that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it all matters. And they try to tell that to people, like in the military, like your job is cleaning bathrooms on an aircraft carrier, right? And you're all grumpy because you joined the Navy and now you just got to clean bathrooms, damn it. But no, really.
Right?
If the pilot can't take a dump, if the mechanic can't take a dump, he can't do his job,
and
you lose the war. It's true.
And if that thing is unsafe, you're talking about the cook, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody's sick.
Everybody's sick. You're not going to be able to fight real well.
He went to the bathroom. He couldn't wash his hands because there was no soap. Then he went, right?
Right.
Next thing you know, what happened to that Nimitz-class aircraft carrier? How come only one plane was flying? Oh, well, everybody was puking.
Puking their guts up. Ed, we're at
Is Casey Stoner coming back? Wait,
we're coming back. We'll get back to that one on the next one. We're going to do a couple of them here. Yeah, we're at 17-minute mark, and I wanted to do an extended 2-minute board.
Oh, like so, our 2-minute boards are always ever 2 minutes.
Never 2 minutes. Okay, so time for the 2-minute board. Yet again, Paul Byrd is once again in the news. Paul Byrd owns he used to run a MotoGP team. He runs a British Superbike team. He's a team owner. He's described as a chicken farmer, which he actually is. He owns like this huge industrial chicken farm. Anyway, he's in trouble. He was caught again with cocaine in his system. Now, this is hysterically not the first time that this has happened. Let me see this. I want to read this. The 48-year-old owner of a chicken farm is known to be an extravagant man. Ed, all I want to be known is as an extravagant man. He was involved in a scandal linked to the drug, cocaine, in 2011, when one of the trucks of his Kawasaki team, then engaged in World Superbike, were found with large quantities of drugs and a gun, 8 kilos of cocaine, amphetamines, and 71 kilograms of marijuana. Ed, my question is this. We drug test the riders. Who else in the pit should be drug tested?
Well, you didn't finish the rest of it. The reason he's in trouble is because he failed a drug test when he was the driver
in a rally race.
Right. That's what brought this all back up again.
Right.
Yeah.
So who else in the paddock should be drug tested, Ed? Mm-hmm. And should we be testing for drugs or for a lack of drugs? Because there's some people, I'm thinking some PR people, who definitely would be better off if we, you know, said, okay, look, your blood THC level is a little low. You're going to have to go.
If you want to chase all the crazy people out of motorsports, you're not going to have any sponsors left.
Right. I actually posed this question to Sandy. She said, okay, the mechanics, anybody who works on the bike, and anybody whose job it is to guarantee rider safety, okay? Drug test those people, okay? All the administrators, make them take drugs. How much funnier would it be? Your press conference, your rider is having, you know, saying something intelligent. All of a sudden, their PR handler comes out and yells, "We must kill the zombies." You know, that would be way better. I think I could be wrong on this.
I think that in order to be an extravagant man, you have to choose one. You don't get to be both.
What?
You can be extravagant or you can be a man.
Man, listen, you know, you can be an adult.
The real solution, of course, is to decriminalize drugs. right? Stop making it so that drug people can earn all this money and tax it, and,
right? And
you know,
you're good to go.
Also, but, you take away some of the, well, it's illegal, so I want to do it part, right?
But this goes back, you know what? It's funny. You just said something like, if you want to drive all the sponsors out of the pits, we start drug testing everybody or whatever. But this goes back to that whole idea of teamwork. You know, in that Denny, and this, man, this is great, Ed. I'm brilliant. Let me explain to you how genius I am here. I'm about to wrap up this entire podcast in this next comment. It touches on everything we've talked about. What was I going to say?
Yeah. No.
I crack me up. The whole thing about sponsorship and teamwork in that interview with Denny Hulme is in the early 70s, the Formula One guy. And he's talking about how to take this sport to the next level. He said, right now, it's big in Europe because it's a chuckle, for basically for royalty. We've got princes and princesses sponsoring teams, like royalty used to be patrons for the arts, right? He said, we have to make this into a business. We have to make it, you know, we have to make it into something that business people want to do. And some people will argue that the professionalism of Grand Prix racing has destroyed much of its charm. I couldn't disagree more. I don't need charm. I need professionals. I want to see professionals work on this. I want to see professionals do this job. And the one of the ways that you do that, I hate to say it, but is to drive the knuckleheads out, because you really don't want to be around that, you know, you don't want to be parked next to the rig where somebody is blasting disco music at 3 a.m, and then all of a sudden the SWAT team shows up because there's 100 kilos of blow in the place.
Yeah, absolutely, whatever the legal solution to drug problems around the world are, drugs have no place in motorsports, in the Olympics, in any kind of competition. It's ridiculous. But yeah, that's the dilemma, right? What we do requires so much money, you know, that when people come with money, you know, we turn a blind eye.
Yes.
Like, you know, exactly. A friend of mine asked me that once, you know, would I take cigarette sponsorship in order to race? And I said yes, and she was horribly disappointed in me, and I was too. But the truth is, you know, I would want to race. That's the dilemma, right?
Sometimes when we hear people say, "I just really want to know who I am as a human being," I tell them, "Maybe that's not what you want to do." All right, this was great, Ed. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, good timing, because the sun just went behind the tree. It's about to get cold.
Yep, we're
and
to go
we have
to
work on your motorcycle again.
He's Ed Sorbo.
I'm pretty sure he's taking advantage of me. Hey, we got to make podcasts, and I got to work. I bring my bike along. Maybe you can fix X, Y, or Z.
I'm giving you actual money
for this. He's Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorbo.
Aloha.